Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Luther College, offering more than 60 areas of study, including the new data science and neuroscience majors, dedicated to preparing students for success in a changing world.
Pediatricians agree that breast milk is the healthiest source of nutrition for a newborn baby, and breastfeeding rates are on the rise in the United States. But nursing a baby is not always an option. When that happens, formula is an option, but some families have turned to milk-sharing communities to provide their babies with breast milk. This hour, we'll talk about the culture of milk sharing. And Sarah Fillmore is with me now. She lives in Des Moines and has an 11-month-old daughter, Eleanor. They've been part of the milk sharing community since Eleanor was about 3 months old. Hello, Sarah. Hi, Sarah.
Hi.
Thank you so much for being here today. And I want to go back in time a little over a year ago when you were pregnant. Was breastfeeding something that you felt strongly about?
Absolutely. I fully intended to breastfeed, but I think I was a little naive about it. I think I just thought that if you wanted to breastfeed, it would work. So I didn't foresee there being any issues with it. I just thought that we would.
So what happened? What made this difficult?
So our daughter was full term, but she had to be in the NICU for about a week, and she had some breathing problems when she was born, and just some things that made it difficult for her to learn how to latch, and she would only take a bottle. So that was difficult. We worked with lactation consultants in the hospital, but nothing seemed to be working. So I decided to pump for her, and I pumped for about 3 months until my supply went away at about 3 months. So
when that happened, tell me what you experienced emotionally. I know that can be such a difficult thing for a mother who really wants to be able to breastfeed her child.
Yeah, it was difficult making the decision to start pumping, but that wasn't as difficult because I knew she was still getting my milk, even though it was through a bottle. But what was more difficult was when my milk was running out and, you know, feeling like these feelings of failure, feeling like, you know, I didn't have enough milk to feed her or something like that. So
obviously that wasn't your fault, but when we feel things mm-hmm. like that, it's not like we can explain them away. What led you to the milk sharing community?
She was on formula for a couple weeks in there. And then we found out about, it's called Human Milk for Human Babies. It's a global milk sharing community, but they have a Iowa Facebook page. And we found out about it through a friend. And I was kind of apprehensive about it. It was difficult. I think it's always difficult to kind of admit that you need help. And I think we always feel like we have to be super mom and do everything ourselves. And but we deliberated about it and we decided to give it a try. And we went on there and I made a post and we made a few matches and started getting milk.
So how does that work? You made a post, people mm-hmm. responded, and what happens next?
So then we message back and forth. We talk a little bit, get to know each other. I always ask a lot of questions about their lifestyle, things like if they smoke or drink, what medications they might be on, try to figure out if it's going to be a good match. And then if we decide it's going to be a good match, then we just work out the logistics of where to meet and things like that. Human Milk for Human Babies doesn't allow at all any exchange of money. So, you know, you can be sure that there's no financial motive. Sometimes donors will offer to replace storage bags or supplies like that. But so sometimes that has happened.
Have you been able to entirely replace formula in your daughter's diet with breast milk through this sharing?
Yeah, almost entirely. There's, you know, sometimes we're in between donations and there's a week or two on formula. But for the most part, for the last 8 months, she's been entirely on breast milk from other moms, and she's been thriving.
clearly a thriving baby was the thing that is most important, mm-hmm. is the thing that's most important to you. But what else do you think you've gotten out of this experience?
You know, I've really grown a lot through it. I've learned that it's not always a bad thing to reach out and to ask for help. And I've gotten to know this community of mothers, and that's probably been the best blessing about being a mother, besides my daughter, is just, you know, this community of mothers that's always willing to support each other and share with each other. And we've just been really blessed by it. So
you touched on some of the concerns that you might have in using milk from another mother. What about mm-hmm. judgment? How have people in your life reacted to the news that you're feeding your daughter breast milk from other people?
Mostly it's been surprise. I don't think that I've felt any negative feedback from anyone else, but there's just a lot of people who don't know about it, who haven't heard of that before, and it takes a little explaining. I think some people, there has been a little bit of negative, when I think some people think, when they hear internet, they think I'm like going on Craigslist and buying breast milk, you know, and from someone that I don't know at all. And so there's a little bit of education, of sharing about how a milk sharing community is different than that, and how there's not any money that changes hands, and how you get to know each other. And but on the whole, people have been really supportive.
How about your doctor? Have you talked to your doctor about this?
Not specifically. Because I honestly don't know how he would take it. So he's just asked if she's breastfed or formula fed, and I've said she's breastfed, and we've kind of left it at that, because I honestly, I don't know how he would react.
Do you think you'll tell Eleanor about this when she's older?
Yeah, I think I will. I think it'll be a good thing to share with her that, you know, that this community existed, and just that we don't always have to do things on our own, and that we can support each other.
Well, Sarah, thank you so much for sharing your story with us today.
Yeah, of course.
Sarah Fillmore of Des Moines. She has an 11-month-old daughter, Eleanor. They've been part of the milk sharing community since Eleanor was 3 months old. We're talking about breast milk sharing today. And joining me now is Susan Falls. She is the author of White Gold, Stories of Breast Milk Sharing. She's also a professor of anthropology at Savannah College of Art and Design, and the mother of two. Hello, Susan.
Hi, how are you today?
Good. Thank you for being here.
My pleasure.
Susan, I know that your interest in breast milk sharing grew out of your personal experience with it. Tell me what led you into this community.
Well, my husband and I adopted a baby. And when we picked him up from the hospital, the pediatrician at the hospital gave us formula, which was, you know, sort of what we expected, really. But when we got home, I had a doula who was helping me to just, you know, learn about the baby and manage everything. And she explained to me that I could acquire donated, I could induce lactation, or that I could acquire donated milk. And I wasn't really prepared to induce lactation because it seemed like it required a lot of hormonal intervention that I wasn't really quite prepared for, but I was very interested in the getting donated milk. I mean, at the time, I didn't even, you know, realize that you could do that. I don't know why it didn't occur to me that that would even be possible, but she explained to me how it worked and put me in touch with a mom in our local sharing network, and I started working with her, and that's really how I started learning about it.
So this wasn't something that you were planning on doing as an adoptive mother. What made you decide that it was the right path for you?
Well, there was a couple of things. You know, while we were preparing for the baby, you know, we were looking around at, you know, the formula options and, you know, which, of course, we wanted to find, you know, figure out which was the best one. I was looking at them. And, you know, a lot of formulas are filled with ingredients that, you know, I couldn't even pronounce. They have a ton of corn syrup in them, some of them. And I was just thinking to myself, why would I give a baby something that I myself wouldn't, you know, drink? And, you know, sort of combined with that was the, you know, just idea that breast milk is best. You know, we hear that over and over again from pediatricians and just, you know, in the public. And so I was very, very interested in giving this a try if it was possible. And then, you know, sort of echoing what Sarah said, just the support that I gained from meeting all the mothers in our community that were doing this was such an important part of my experience that I felt like it was the right thing for our family.
Well, and we'll talk about milk banks more in a moment, but why wasn't that an option for you to go to a milk bank where, again, mothers are donating their milk and then people are able to get that for their babies through the milk bank?
Well, that's a great question because the number of milk banks right now is expanding. And I did think about that, and I called my I learned from a friend who had used a milk bank, you know, who I could call. And I called and I found out how much it cost. You know, banked milk costs somewhere usually between $5 and $8 an ounce. And I called my insurance company and asked about, you know, whether or not they would be able to support that. They would not have been, they said that they couldn't support it. But the real issue is not really the financial one, but rather that milk banks follow an allocation protocol that shunts banked milk to NICU units. Babies in NICU units are, of course, very vulnerable, and it's quite clear that using breast milk rather than formula confers health advantages to that you know, really vulnerable population. And because of that, insurance institutions and also the state a lot of times, you know, supports the funding of milk banks. And of course, you know, milk banks do incur costs of, you know, reaching out, of treatment, of their staff, of their building, of, you know, the transportation of the milk. And they have to recoup those expenses in some way.
So the milk,
you know,
can
become nonprofit.
Prohibitively expensive for someone without an insurance connection. Susan, we're going to return to this conversation in just a moment. Susan Falls is the author of White Gold, Stories of Breast Milk Sharing. We're going to take a short break. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Luther College, offering more than 60 areas of study, including the new data science and neuroscience majors, dedicated to preparing students for success in a changing world.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about breast milk sharing. With me right now is Susan Falls. She's the author of White Gold, Stories of Breast Milk Sharing. She's an anthropologist, but she's also a mother who shared breast milk and fed it to her two children. And just before the break, Susan, we were talking about why going to a milk bank was not an option for you. It's not an option for a lot of moms. So you turned to this peer-to-peer network, and you had some preconceptions about what this peer-to-peer network might be like. Why don't you tell us what you found when you started connecting with the donors?
Well, yes, I did have preconceived notions about who would be involved in it. And looking back on it now, it seems kind of, I don't know why I had the preconceptions that I had, but I sort of expected for them to be, you know, kind of left-leaning people who were, you know, a kind of lefty granola kind of, I don't really know how to describe it, but, you know, sort of Volvo set. And what I found was that there was just an incredible diversity of people who were participating in this network. And it was such an eye-opening and wonderful opportunity for our family to meet people that we probably, you know, otherwise might not have had an opportunity to get to know. When I began to do, you know, research on the breast milk sharing community in earnest, I talked to lots and lots of people who echoed those sentiments, which I thought was such an interesting and important aspect of this practice, because it's, you know, one of the ways in which, you know, the sort of fabric of a community can be strengthened around, you know, the sharing of something that really is for the health of everybody. And I just was very, very, it was very important to me that I had the opportunity to meet all of these mothers.
What made you want to do an anthropological study of this community? It's one thing to participate, but clearly your professional mind was at work at the same time.
Well, there was a couple of things about this that I thought were really important. You know, this kind of, in some ways, the anthropological project is one that takes things that we sort of maybe take for granted, or things that are overlooked, or things that maybe not very many people know about, and we explore them and try to connect them to other kinds of practices. So kind of, you know, as Sarah pointed out, not that many people know about breast milk sharing, first of all. And whenever I told people that this is what I was doing, they were surprised, they were interested, they always asked lots and lots of questions. I was constantly meeting people that said things to me like, oh, gosh, I wish I would have known about that. You know, I always had too much milk, or, oh, gosh, I really wish I would have known about that because, you know, I was not able to breastfeed my baby. And so I thought that it was a really great resource for people. In the sort of, you know, larger scheme of things, the ways in which this community operates provides such a wonderful model for the ways in which people can come together using existing infrastructures like Facebook or, you know, FedEx or, you know, coolant or roads that, you know, were never really meant for these kinds of purposes, but that can be used to bring people together and also, you know, to form a kind of critique of some of the things that are happening around us. So, you know, as a sort of invisible to many people, but nonetheless important form of dissent, I felt like it was a really interesting way for people to come together, and I wanted to explore that.
I'd love to hear from someone who's part of the donor community. We have already talked to, of course, a couple of moms who received breast milk, and we've got some messages coming in from people with similar experiences. Billy says, I'd love to share my experience. My son Alex has been on donor milk since he was 3 months old. That's about when I lost my milk supply. I tried various formulas that he'd spit right back up or just wouldn't take. Then I discovered the donor milk community. It's a godsend, and I've met some very lovely, caring mothers. A couple of times I wasn't able to find a donor on the site, and I braved it and posted for help on local sale pages, and the help just poured in. It made me want to cry how much these moms wanted to help. He's over a year now, and I still have women offering milk, as he isn't taking solids too well yet. He's happy, healthy, and the smartest baby I've met. I'm so happy I discovered donor milk. And here's a comment from Shoshana. She says, I was the very grateful recipient of several gallons of donor breast milk from a few mamas over the last 9 months. I became extremely sick following the birth of my son, and my supply couldn't keep up with his demand. The kind and generous gifts of liquid gold made an enormous difference in his health and my peace of mind. Although we were able to restart our breastfeeding relationship once my illness lessened in severity, I'm relieved to know that donor milk remains an option for us should future needs arrive. And I want to bring someone else into the conversation. I'm talking with Susan Falls, the author of White Gold, Stories of Breast Milk Sharing. Jean Drulis is also here with us. She's co-founder of Mother's Milk Bank of Iowa. It was the fifth in the nation to open about 15 years ago. Hello, Jean.
Hello there.
Thank you so much for being here. And take us back about 15 and a half years ago. How did the Mother's Milk Bank of Iowa get started?
Well, at that time, I was working at the University of Iowa in infant nutrition research with Dr. Eckhart Ziegler, who is the other co-founder of the Milk Bank, and he attends in the NICU and the neonatal intensive care unit. And for babies, breast milk is important for all babies, but for the little vulnerable micropreemies, it could be a matter of life and death. And so moms that birth babies early, many times their milk does not come in right away, and so there's that period when there's no breast milk available for those babies. So we started out to to establish a milk bank specifically for the babies in the NICU here at the Children's Hospital and ultimately across the state and the nation. So we had to raise funds to get this milk bank started, but it was all worth it because, you know, babies just do better on it, and it's here for them when maternal supply is not available.
Well, and as I mentioned, this was the fifth breast milk bank in the nation. It was the first breast milk bank in the Midwest. Did you run into any obstacles to starting this? Donor milk was not common 15 years ago.
That's right. You know, and it's still, it's not a household word like blood banking is, but it's better known now. But back then, no, not at all. And so even within the Children's Hospital, which is a referral hospital here for our state, it just, you know, each attending physician and their feeding strategies, when it became available, it was a really slow start. But
a slow start because it was difficult to find donors?
No, it was a slow start to feed it. We had, okay. And I knew that it would be because it was basically unheard of. And so, but as then they watched and saw how the babies did, as time went on, it's now a standard of care here. It took a few years to become standard of care, but any place where a baby is, whatever unit they are, in the absence of mother's own milk, donor milk's available, the mother-baby unit, NICU, PICU, so forth.
Well, and we've talked about how this peer-to-peer network operates and, uh-huh. and some of the risks involved in that, because, again, you don't know for sure what mothers have been putting into their own bodies, et cetera. With a milk bank and these very vulnerable babies in the NICU, how do you control for that? How do you protect against that?
So we have national guidelines. The Human Milk Banking Association of North America, it was established in 1985. So we have a long track record, and all the member milk banks, were a nonprofit association, follow these guidelines. So they tell us how to screen milk donors, and you know, our closest relative is the blood banking, and our screening somewhat is based upon blood banking. But so we screen the donors for medical and lifestyle factors, and then their blood is screened. The milk is then pooled, and by pooled, I mean we pool with at least three donors to more evenly distribute the components, and then the milk is pasteurized, and the pasteurization eliminates bacteria and viruses. And then there's testing post-pasteurization for bacteria, and milk has to be less than one colony-forming units in order for us to dispense it.
Now, of course, one of the really beautiful things about breast milk is the immunity that's passed from a mother to a baby. Does pasteurization eliminate some of that benefit?
It doesn't eliminate it. It diminishes it slightly. But there's still plenty of immunologic benefit available.
So at this point, how many donors do you have in your network?
You know, we probably have around 300 donors. We ask, and it's sort of these women that are blessed with surplus milk, many of them have thousands and thousands of ounces. And so depending on their extent of their gift sort of speaks for the number of donors that we have. But we are always, always, always in need of milk donors because we're growing continually. To give you an idea of the reach, we dispensed a little more than 200,000 ounces in this last year throughout Iowa and across the nation. I'm not sure if in 16 we dispensed to 13 states, Iowa and 12 others.
And are you able to meet demand?
we are, and the demand is, since inception, is ever increasing. And thankfully, these milk donors are incredible. They're just remarkable, and we couldn't exist if they didn't altruistically come to us and have that giving spirit that they do. And, you know, they thank us for taking their milk, and you know, I just can't say enough to thank them for.
And again, as Susan was mentioning earlier, women cannot be paid for their breast milk. So this is a voluntary donation.
It is totally voluntary, yes.
Well, Jean, thank you so much for sharing your perspective with us today.
Absolutely.
Jean Drulis is co-founder of the Mother's Milk Bank of Iowa, based in Iowa City. You're welcome to join the conversation. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at IPR Talk, and you can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio. Tawil is on the line in Cedar Rapids. Hello, Tawil.
Hello. Thank you for accepting my call. I am an imam. I am a religious leader at the Mother Mosque of America. And we feel as Muslims that this issue of a breastfeeding is also a religious issue, where the nursing mom, if she fed 3, 4, up to 10 times that baby will become her son metaphorically, and there is some consequences after that, where he cannot marry from that house, or he also may be of inheritance. I mean, he could receive some inheritance. And there is a lot of issues religiously connected. So my question is, this is organized, and is there any way that these kids in the future will know each other and have this ties of family ties?
Well, Imam, thank you so much for calling. This is a cultural practice. This is a cultural tradition. And Susan, you encountered this in your experience with milk sharing. One of your donors was Muslim, right?
That's correct. And with that particular family, have stayed in close contact with them for the reasons that your caller has just pointed out. The children have become milk siblings. There is a prohibition against intermarriage of milk siblings. And this is something that people have to really think about with regard to milk sharing, and becomes an issue that might need to be considered when people are using banked milk, even, because, as the caller pointed out, the mother and, of course, the baby may not ever be able to know who those donors are. And in terms of the, you know, sort of construction of kinship that results from the sharing of breast milk, it can, you know, present a sort of quandary for people. And an issue that really has to be navigated by the families.
Well, and in your encounter, when you learned what a milk sibling was, it took you a little while to fully understand what it was. But in many countries where Islamic culture is the majority culture, it actually does have legal implications, right?
It does. It can have legal implications, and you know, families, you know, may practice this somewhat differently. So I don't want to make too broad of a generalization, but it can confer, it confers kinship, and people do it for all kinds of different reasons. Sometimes those reasons are strategic. Sometimes those reasons are have to do with power relationships or family ties or community. Consequences, but the, you know, a milk sibling is the same as any other sibling. The way that we sort of reckon kinship in the United States is very different in many ways, but it is a constructed relationship nonetheless. If you think about, you know, the way that people kind of, you know, move in and out of a family, it is not always just by blood. There's all kinds of other ways in which kinship is conferred. You know, adoption is a sort of case in point.
Right.
I don't think that most people would consider their adopted you know, children to be any less of their children than their children by blood.
And, you know, Susan, we're nearly out of time. And talking about a different culture and how this may be seen in a different culture, the culture of milk sharing is growing in the United States. This is becoming an important part of our culture. What do you want people to know about it? Just briefly, very briefly.
Well, I think it's a wonderful way for people to, to commune. Many people are in desperate need of breast milk. They, you know, want to feed their children breast milk. And there's many mothers who have an oversupply who would, you know, love to be able to help out another family. And so I think that, you know, if people can find each other, and there's lots of different ways that they can do that, it's a really wonderful way to for people to come together.
Susan Falls is the author of White Gold: Stories of Breast Milk Sharing. This is Talk of Iowa.